This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Let's get to our first guest.
But we, who are all that are left of the old engineers and mechanics, have pledged ourselves to salvage the world. We have the airways, all that's left of them. We have the seas, the brotherhood of efficiency. We're the last trustees of civilization when everything else has failed.
I've been waiting for this.
It is time, ladies and gentlemen. Time to admit even climate heroes can be flawed. We speak of Elon Musk, the visionary who revolutionized the electric car industry. His batteries save emissions. Musk is deploying satellites to bring communications to every corner of the world. His rockets carry scientific instruments into space. But like every human, Elon's mind contains dangerous myths as well. David Beers called out toxic Musk memes in the Tie, Canada's independent online journal. David is the founding editor and current editor-in-chief with a stable of award-winning contributing journalists. Beers was a senior editor at Mother Jones magazine and publishes in major outlets. From Vancouver, David Beers, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thanks for having me.
You know, for many of our listeners, Elon Musk is a savior with electric solutions for transportation and the power industry. What brought you to re-examine Elon's master plans?
Well, part of it might be personal. I grew up in Silicon Valley. My father was a rocket scientist. He worked on secret weapons for Lockheed missiles in space. I was very steeped in this ethos of what I call techno-optimism, mega-project-saving endeavors. Over time, what I've realized is that while someone like an Elon Musk is certainly brilliant and to be admired for what he accomplishes, we invest too much faith and power in their every utterance and their every analysis of the challenges we face and how to overcome them. They tend to be reductionists, and they tend to always point towards the great man in control of massive technological fixes when a lot of humanity's problems can only really be solved in different ways.
When a truckers' protest occupied Canada's capital, Elon Musk tossed out an early morning tweet seeming to say Adolf Hitler was better than Prime Minister Justin Trudeau because Hitler had a budget, at least. Is he trying to be a counterculture hero or what?
You know, it's funny, right? Because he likes to live on this very public stage, and of course social media has afforded him that. He's not the first, right? He's not the first space entrepreneur to behave that way. In fact, Wernher von Braun, the Nazi scientist who came to the U.S. and basically built the American space program, used to sell his visions on the Disney Channel. And so, you know, the idea is if you want to whip up public support for your major mega projects, you know, popular media is a great way to do it. And these folks are not without ego. I don't think you'd be able to accomplish what Elon Musk has been able to without a large ego. But unfortunately, it's unchecked at this point. He has 73 million Twitter followers, and he feels that he can pronounce on anything without really being held accountable. In the case of Canada, where I live now, as I say, I was born in California. I'm a U.S. citizen, but I live in Canada. We were shocked to see these tweets from him. He had also tweeted that the Canadian government is illegitimate and does not have the support of its own people. And so basically, here was this really powerful man with all kinds, as you say, people who look at him as a savior and as a prophet, basically urging sedition, basically urging the overthrow and the end of the existing Canadian government. You know, very troubling, and I think an example of how he's vastly overreached.
Well, Musk also appeared on Joe Rogan's podcast. That was in 2018, before the pandemic. He famously smoked pot on camera and wore his Occupy Mars t-shirt. Why not Occupy Mars, like Arnold Schwarzenegger in the movie Total Recall?
It's a wonderful idea to play with. It's the stuff, again, of Hollywood movies and fantasy. The problem I have with it is the critical moment that we're in. We don't really have more than a few decades left to really coordinate an effective response to climate change. And in order to do that, we need our brightest minds to basically remind us that we only have one planet and we have to take care of it, and there is no alternative. The message from Musk is the opposite. Follow me to Mars, somehow that we will, quote, escape the inevitable unraveling of Earth. So He's a doomsayer. He's fatalistic. He says there's no hope for Earth. At the same time, he offers a false hope, which is that somehow we'd be able to continue the species on Mars, which is just a fundamentally difficult place to populate, to get to in the first place, and then utterly hostile to human existence. So it's a false hope, a false promise, right at the moment when we really can't afford to be distracted.
Well, I believe he proposed that we could terraform Mars by exploding thousands of nuclear explosions. Pretty far-fetched stuff, but the EU, the European Union, looked at Mars exploration and habitation and just measured out the radiation, as you point out in your article, and they're off. They don't want to take part in this. It's not feasible from their perspective.
No, I mean, they're pragmatic, right? They're realistic. You know, some facts about Mars. Its average temperature is the same as a really cold day in Siberia. If you're not in a spacesuit, the air is so thin that your blood will boil. Anybody who's lived on an island, you know, thought it would be fun to get away and live on an island for a while, realizes you've got to schlep all this stuff back and forth from shore. Try traveling all the way to Mars, bringing everything there. So it's just an unreasonable hope. And you do have to ask yourself why. Why does somebody like Musk feel that of all the goals for humanity that he could invest his brilliance in, why this one? And my feeling is that the guy was, you know, it's been documented. He was raised on comic books. He famously read every comic book in the comic shop in his town in South Africa. And the problem with comic books is they're both far more dramatic and far more simplistic than real life. And, of course, at the center of them is always a lone hero, not some kind of boring collective muddling through action of the sort that we kind of need at this moment on planet Earth.
Well, that demand to get off Earth quick didn't start with Elon Musk. Scientist Stephen Hawking famously warned life on Earth is so vulnerable, we've got to get to other planets. And now there are multi-million-dollar institutions founded on this, like Nick Bostrom and his Future of Humanity Institute at Oxford. They claim, as you say, that we don't need to prioritize climate change or mass extinction or poverty or injustice, but space exploration, that's got to be the big driver, and that's where we put our money. I hate to be harsh, but it seems like only rich white men could want something like this, don't you think?
I don't know. Is it just a coincidence the way these rocket ships are shaped? In other words, I think there's some projection going on there. You know, one of the things that these folks don't think through, and again, they're very brilliant in their area. As a technical mind, Musk is obviously brilliant. As a man who knows how to arrange financial deals, he's good at that. By the way, a lot of his money so far has come from the United States government through either subsidies or outright contracts, and he's angling for many more. And so there's a few myths going on here. One is that he's this self-made libertarian entrepreneur doing it on his own and showing that the U.S. government's incapable of helping make serious technological things happen when actually he's fully intertwined with the U.S. government. But secondly, one of the things that these folks don't think a lot about is the kinds of political issues, social issues, matters of human nature that would cause Earth to get to the point where we'd have to leave in the first place. Would we not transport those same tendencies to the next place we ended up? And now we'd be on a place like Mars, underneath a dome, having to go outside in spacesuits. Everything would have to work absolutely perfect. The amount of rigor, the amount of discipline, the restrictions on freedom that a life like that would require and would lend themselves to an accelerated arc of the kinds of conflicts we see now. How long would it take for revolt and dissension and class, you know, widening of class distinctions and all the other ills that humanity can't seem to solve here on Earth? How long would it take for those to express themselves somewhere else? Somebody like Musk is too busy thinking about how he's going to bombard Mars with hundreds of nuclear weapons to change its environment to actually think through the political and social environment that would then exist even if he'd made it a habitable place.
Yes, I wonder if you've heard of the 1989 book Stark by the English comedian Ben Elton?
No, tell me about that.
Okay, so Elton, back in 1989, described a conspiracy of billionaires building a spaceship to escape an ecologically dying Earth. That was recreated in the recent Netflix hit Don't Look Up. So it seems like men increase their obscene billions while wrecking the planet, but they think somehow these laws of life and physics will not apply to them. They'll either die before it all falls apart, or they'll get away into space. It's an odd escapism.
It is, you know, and when you think about it, somebody like, we should always look at our leaders, and we should ask ourselves about their formation. You know, if you want to understand the strengths and weaknesses of somebody who seeks to tell you where we're going and how we're going to get there, you should ask where they came from and what character traits they display. And what you see with somebody like an Elon Musk or a Jeff Bezos is these guys are fully invested in an endless growth ideology and a so-called freedom ideology. But of course, it's a freedom that's tied to accumulating wealth and then spending it as you please. So these guys don't want to hear about limits. They don't want to hear about collective measures arrived at to restrict some freedoms in order to accord more freedom and liberty to other members of humanity. They just have a, as I would say, a comic book concept of how society works. And what it boils down to is I'm the winner, I get to do what I want, and I need to be able to express my ego in the most grandiose way possible. It's pretty hard to think of a more grandiose way to express your ego than to send a giant phallic-shaped rocket supposedly to Mars. I will back up and say there's a danger at looking at these folks as being just sort of off in a strange fantasy. There's method to their fantastical ideas. And when you look closely at what Musk really spends his time doing, it's building a private, although massively U.S. government-subsidized space works, in order to put his rockets not as far away as Mars, but merely 300-400 miles in the air. Most people don't think about this because when they hear space, they think of something that's just vastly out there. But most of his satellites are orbiting at a distance from us on the planet that San Francisco is from L.A. So basically, this guy's found a patch of real estate 400-500 miles away and figured out how to colonize it with his technology, his machinery. And from that platform, as you pointed out in your intro, he's going to then build an infrastructure of communication to service the Earth. Because the Earth, of course, is where the money is and where the wealth is and where the action is and where the Twitter accounts are. As much as he projects himself as somebody who would rather be on Mars and thinks about Mars all day, he's really kind of, at some level, a basic American type, you know, a tycoon, a techno baron who is building the next economy here on Earth and trying to corner it.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is journalist and editor David Beers. David is also an adjunct professor at the University of British Columbia's Graduate School of Journalism. David, in your article, Enough with Toxic Masculinity, you compared Musk's demeanor to religion. How so?
Well, and I elaborated on this in a piece. This piece is drawn and a little bit shorter than a larger piece that was published in the New Republic magazine in December of 2020. You can go find that. And that one I elaborate on more about this idea of manifest destiny. This is an American concept. It's kind of woven up in Protestantism and the idea that God anoints the chosen and rewards them with success here on earth. And collectively, the idea that God wanted Europeans, white Europeans, to arrive in the New World and colonize the New World, and that we were doing God's will. And that's why we had to move across the continent and subjugate indigenous people and, I guess, enslave blacks from Africa, etc. This was all justified as being part of our destiny, our manifest destiny. We were fulfilling God's will. That there was something special about us that was ordained within us and that we were simply fulfilling our destiny. Well, you know, actually, this idea that we have to roam far and conquer other worlds and colonize them is not really necessarily inherent. You know, it is an ideology. The other thing is that his message that we must go to Mars in order to save ourselves is a story of salvation. Of course, most religion turns on a couple questions. Why are we here? What is our purpose? And how do we achieve salvation? if the answer is, well, we're here because God wants us to colonize and explore and expand and roam far, and you've sort of done all that on planet Earth, then I guess we must explore space. And this argument's been made from the beginning and was employed quite a bit by this guy, Werner von Braun, I mentioned earlier, the German. And, you know, the second part of that is to be a doomsayer, to be a prophet of doom and say we're all doomed. The Earth will be much like God flooding the Earth and deciding only to save Noah. This is that story all over again. The Earth will be destroyed and only a few will make it. And if you're one of the chosen ones, you will live on Mars. So there's a lot of religious resonances to this, including the idea of just the lone male prophet leading us out of the wilderness.
I know many of my listeners are real Elon Musk fans, and some of them will think that if we dare to criticize some part of him, that we're really working and helping the oil industry because we're bringing down the guy that's going to get us out of this. And I would love to have a Tesla instead of my gas-burning car. No way I can afford it. We need this guy to succeed, or at least the good part of him. What are we to do?
Well, I agree with you, and I hope that I made it clear at the beginning that I'm a huge admirer of Elon Musk's technical mind. I wonder why we didn't have an electric car earlier, but I'm glad that he, you know, pushed through a lot of technology that was made by others, and he assembled it and invented some more and gave us the electric car. I would caution, though, people against the idea that we would have never had the electric car without Elon Musk. You know, again, history has to be looked at as kind of an accumulation of many people's labors and all creating a critical moment when the crest. And usually there is an avatar, there is somebody at the forefront of it who kind of emblemizes that moment, and Musk deservedly is so. But he hasn't done it alone. So that would be my first point. Secondly, you know, there was a time around the Industrial Revolution when everything was up for grabs politically. And one of the ideas was we don't want democracy. This is too complex of a new world we're entering now that we're going to have highly organized industrialized systems. We're going to have to extract resources, distribute them efficiently, make really large-scale decisions about how wealth is distributed. You know what? We can't really leave that to the people. And so what arrived at that moment was an ideology called technocracy. And the idea is that the world would be ruled by technocrats, that would be ruled by engineers. Engineers would make the decisions. Engineers would, they were the smartest. They were trained. They knew things we didn't know. They became the new priests. And we would do what they said. They would arrive at the decisions, and they would tell us how it was going to be. And so this was a briefly popular ideology. It competed with others like communism, socialism, capitalism. It's faded away now. But in Musk, I see some of that resonance, some of that yearning. You know, this is too complicated. We can't muddle through. Democracy is too messy. What we need is a few smart folks who really know how to build stuff. And they'll get us out of this. And that was what Joe Rogan was saying, for example, to Musk in his show. And that show has had, I don't know how many tens of millions of views at this point. So there's still a yearning and a resonance for the great technocratic leader. I just would split it. I would say appreciate Musk for what he does and the role he provides in society, but don't accord him more political wisdom or even religious kind of powers of leadership, then is safe.
Well, as you say, you first published your Elon Musk critique in the New Republic and then in the Tie. What does Tie mean, and what can listeners expect to find there?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Tie is a word from a language called Chinook. And Chinook is a language that was developed first among various indigenous peoples who lived all around the Northwest. So from what is now British Columbia all the way down to California, what is called Cascadia. There were many indigenous groups, and they all needed to be able to talk to each other and trade. So they developed this language called Chinook. And it didn't have a lot of words, but they were the important words and effective words. And when Europeans arrived, then they adopted this language to conduct their business and trade with indigenous folks. And so Tie means chief. It means someone or something of superior qualities. And we chose that word because people in this part of the continent know that word. and it connects back to indigenous folks. And that is the spirit of the Tai. The Tai is regional journalism. It's local journalism, but with a big lens. As you see, we don't shy away from talking about Elon Musk, even though we're based here in British Columbia. So if you're curious about life in the Northwest or Western Canada, and I can tell you this is a fascinating place to do journalism. It's a very international place, all at the same time that it's very specific in its issues. You know, if you're curious about that sort of thing, go to THETYEE, the Tai'e, Google that, and you'll land on our pages.
You must get hits from all over the world.
Oh, absolutely. We get about 1 million page views a month. And one of the things that I'm really gratified by is we'll publish something about climate change or about green politics or about Elon Musk or whatever. And people from all over the world will share it. And we'll know that because the authors of these pieces will get back and say, I can't believe how far and wide this piece went. And I think it's a testament to local journalism. I think people feel very connected to local journalism if it's independent and it's speaking to the issues they want to know about. They feel very connected, and then because they feel connected, they want to share. And so, like, I have writers who say, no, I wrote a piece for the National Newspaper of Canada, and I didn't get half as much interest. And I think it's because people read it in the national paper and say, okay, everybody's seen that. But if they read it in the Tai'e because it's their local favorite source of information, they'll say, I'm not sure everybody sees this. I've got to share it. So, yeah, I think we're a great experiment, very hopeful experiment. I know there's a lot of doom and gloom about the future of journalism. The Tai'e is an example of a thriving example. We're member-supported. We're independent. I think we're an example of where journalism's going.
Well, you and I lived through a local story last summer that I think the whole world needs to really realize. People think climate change is 2050 or 2100, but we had extreme heat up to 50 degrees almost, and the floods throughout the lower mainland there. I wonder, with all the other troubles, when people are focused on the Ukraine or the truckers or the pandemic, are you going to continue to cover climate change, and should we?
Climate change has been the number one story for me. I remember writing about climate change and publishing stories about climate change before we started the Tai'e in 2003. We were publishing stories about climate change from the beginning, and people would say, well, oh, this is boring, and why so much? I said, well, it's just, I don't know, it's just the end of humanity. It sort of seems like kind of a top story. And of course, you know, part of what I think has always driven my desire to publish stories about it is I do believe that if we're well-informed and not disinformed and not distracted, but if we're well-informed, we can collectively make changes and make the right decisions. And time is growing shorter. The span of time we have to make those decisions and make those changes is now sadly far shorter than it was when I started on this. But there is still time to make significant changes. Elon Musk is part of the solution, I agree. He's also part of the problem, as we've discussed. And we have to sort through his disinformation at the same moment that we celebrate his contribution. You know, I mean, he was, at the beginning of COVID, he was telling everybody this thing will be gone in a month. You know, so let's not assume Elon Musk, because he's smart, is right about everything.
Right. He can make cars, but not societies. And I think we need to know the difference. You can find this all at thetai'e.ca. Our guest, David Beers, is the founding and current editor-in-chief. You can find his articles in many magazines. I'll put links for this interview in my show blog at ecoshock.org, including David's article. You should read it. Enough with Toxic Masculinity. David, you brightened my day with your piece. Thanks for spending time with us.
Well, thanks. I really enjoyed this.
I'm Alex Smith. For Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.